Okay, the Tosefta in the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos, that sounds like a Gemara Shir, it's still Parsha Shir, I promise. The Tosefta in the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos asks why it is that Yehuda deserved to become the tribe of kings. What did Yehuda do to deserve to be king? He's an unlikely choice. He's an unlikely choice for several reasons. First reason is he's not a firstborn. Second reason is he was not the favorite son, right? So the two most likely choices are Reuven and Yosef. Then the third reason is he's an unlikely choice because he was banished. He was held responsible for everything that happened because he's the one that sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim. And if you think about what he was doing when he sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim, it was really, really rough because he was the one who decided that better than allow Yosef to die or to have Yosef killed is to have him at tremendous risk spiritually, meaning to send a good-looking young man to a place that is shtufei zima, that's full of znus. Right? That was Yehuda's decision. There's no way, al derech hateva, that works out. You know, that's going to end well. The fact that that ended well was miraculous. It was beyond. And you know what? What was Yehuda's? I just realized this when I was driving to Teaneck the other day. So I had time in the car to think a little bit. So I just realized that, and it's a double pasha when you think about it. So what was Yehuda's punishment? He's banished from the family. Where does he end up? With Tamar, facing a temptation when you're all alone and you're under the support of family and you're faced with temptation. How do you do, Yehuda? Right? What do you expect is going to happen to Yosef? You're sending him to a place of znos. He's all alone. He's going to be faced with temptation. How can you put him in such a situation? So the Tosefta is bothered by the Kasha. And the Tosefta gives four answers, but each answer has a problem with it. So normally, like we like to do three questions, we're going to break that rule. We're going to do like Begeder Manishtana, right? We're going to do four questions today. Because the Tosefta has four answers, and each one is problematic of why Yehuda was Zochen HaMalchus. So the first one says the Tosefta, Bepnei Shehoda B'Tamar, because he admitted to having impregnated Tamar. He admitted he was moda to his mistake. Now there's something about that, and the Tosefta itself says that's a very difficult answer to accept, because you know what's even better than admitting to your mistake? Not doing it in the first place, right? Not making the mistake would be an even better thing than to admit to your mistake. I remember when I was a little kid, we had this thing where the rules were, when we got to school, I went to South Shore, when we got to school, we were supposed to drop our coats and our bags in the classroom and then go straight to Shacharis, right? That sounds pretty normal. So one day, I think I might have told you this story, one day we go to the classroom and to drop our coats and bags, and one kid throws a paper toward the garbage can and another kid comes and swats it, right? He blocks the shot. And then what developed from that was a game of, you know, of basketball involving papers, several papers, and several garbage cans. By a week later, I believe we had a 16 league. There may have been jerseys, you know? Like, and essentially Shacharis wasn't happening anymore. Like, people weren't, certainly we weren't coming on time to Shacharis, and it got noticeable that Rabbi Hertzberg, who should have a refuah shleima, Rabbi Hertzberg called us. Called all this chevra together to give us mussar, and to, you know, ask us, why were you doing this? So each kid had a more ridiculous excuse than the kid before. Oh, it's because I have this condition where I need to throw things into a basket. Like, it didn't even make any sense. People were saying things that made absolutely no sense. I didn't know that there's davening in school. Like, I didn't know the school is orthodox. Like, I mean, just ridiculous, ridiculous excuses. And he punished every single kid. And then it came my turn to answer for myself. And I was trying to assess the situation, seeing how it's working out for everybody else. So I went to Rabbi Hertzberg, and it was all in front of everybody. So it was on the big bima in front. So I said, "There's no excuse. It was the wrong thing to do, and I shouldn't have done it, and I won't do it again." And he said, "You're not getting punished. You have a good day." So when I tried that again 2 weeks later, after the week continued, it didn't work as well the second time, but the first time it worked really well. There is, I understand, but imagine if he would have rewarded me. oh, for your honesty, you're going to be the valedictorian now. And like, and imagine the good kid who, you know, there was always that one kid who was in the classroom with us and said, guys, it's time for davening. Stop it, guys. You shouldn't be doing this. Right? So imagine that kid. Like, what's he going to feel when, like, Rabbi Hertzberg names me valedictorian because I admitted? That could be like, he admitted, but he missed Shacharis for, like, 2 weeks, you know, came at the end and put on his tefillin. Like, come on, you know, how's that okay? That shouldn't be okay. And that's a deceptive kasha on Yehuda. Shahoda b'tamar. Better than being hoda b'tamar is not doing it in the first place. Parenthetically, Rabbi Orlovsky likes to tell the story that he was babysitting his grandchildren and he had forgotten to sign their homework as the bus was coming to pick them up. And the kid's like, no, I can't go to school without my homework signed. I can't do it. So he's like looking, and he, you know, he was babysitting. He's not used to this, you know, as a grandfather. So he's like looking for something to sign their homework with. And the first writing implement he finds is a purple crayon. So he just takes it and he signs the homework with the purple crayon. And he doesn't have the best handwriting. And the little boy goes to school, and the teacher says to the child, "When do you have your homework signed?" The child says, and pulls out this thing with purple crayon scribbled on it. So the teacher could not believe. And the teacher said, "Who signed this?" And the child said, "My Zaidi signed it." And the teacher said, "Tell me the MS. Who signed it for real?" And the kid said, "My Zaidi signed it." So he said, "If you tell me the MS, you'll get a chocolate." So the kid said, "I signed it." Now, it doesn't make sense always to reward someone for admitting their mistakes. That's only going to cause false, you know. Okay, so that's number one. The first thing Tosefta says, Shahoda b'tamar, but it's difficult. Tosefta itself rejected. Second, the Tosefta says, V'pnei shehitzil es achiv min hamisa. Because he saved his brother from Misa. Yosef was going to get killed, and now he saved him from getting killed. But if you look at the actual argument he made to save Yosef, very difficult. What does Yehuda say to them? Ma betza ki narugis achinu v'chisinu es damo. What does ma betza mean? Ma betza. How do you translate that? What do we have to gain from doing this? Now, when the Shvatim made the decision about Yosef, were they thinking about what they have to gain? Was that their approach? Did they say, okay, let's get a Din Torah together. What's best for us? How can we cut more people out of the Yerusha to get more for us? I mean, is that really what they were going with? Yeah, they maybe in their subconscious, but there was a Din Torah over here. They held that this was right, that this was the psak. How does the argument of Ma Betza convince them otherwise? I mean, the response to Ma Betza should have been, what do you think of us? You think we're doing this for our own self-interest? We're doing this because this was a psak halacha, this was a din Torah. So it's true, he did save him, but how did it even work? Third, the Tosefta suggests, Yehuda became king mipnei ha'anava. What's the anava? Specifically when he took the fall for Binyamin. Va'ata yeshiv na'avdecha tachas hanar eved la'adoni. Instead of allowing Binyamin to be an Eved because he found the goblet in his bag, I'm going to be the Eved. I'm going to be the Eved. Yehuda takes full responsibility. But Tosefta says, you know, that's not really such a great act on Yehuda's part. He had no choice. Why did he have no choice? He promised Yaakov that he's taking full responsibility. You know, that in fact, that's what Yehuda explained to Yosef, according to Rashi. If you're Mavrasaj, you'll see that Yehuda, with Rashi, that Yehuda explained to Yosef, you might be wondering why I'm the one stepping up, why you guys say love Yehuda, why I'm the one having this conversation with you. I don't really have a choice. I can't go back empty-handed. So I'm the one that's on the hook for this. So is it really such a great act then to step in for Binyamin? And then finally, fourth, the Tosefta suggests Yehuda was Zoche l'malchus, because he was Mekadesh Shmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When? At a much, much later date. Standing at the foot of the Yamsuf, and someone needed to jump in, it was Shevet Yehuda, according to some versions of Chazal, Shevet Yehuda that jumped in. And that's why they were Zochel Malchus, the Mesiris Nefesh. They were willing to give up their life al Kiddush Hashem. And that, it's because of that willingness that they were Zochel Malchus. That's also difficult. because they were not the first nor the last that were willing to jump into danger for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not the first or the last. Avram Avinu or Kazdim, Yitzchak Avinu by the Akedah. The Jewish people from our very birth have been imbued with a certain sense of Mesiras Nefesh. And you know what? Many lesser people than Yehuda were experienced or practiced a sense of Mesiras Nefesh. Many lesser people than the Dordea, who without the promise of being saved by a miraculous splitting of the sea like Yehuda had, and without facing certain death anyway because the Egyptians are bearing down on them like Shevet Yehuda had, were willing to be most of themselves al Kiddush Hashem. So what's the big deal about Yehuda doing so at the Yam? Well, why weren't the other Shvatim willing to do the same? So I saw Mahalik. You know, when I was in Kerem Biavne, on Fridays we didn't really have anything in Yeshiva. There was no official Shir or Seder even. I don't think, maybe there was Seder, but no one went to it. So on Fridays very often we would go to Yerushalayim to do mitzvahs over there. So one of the mitzvahs that in Yerushalayim, what I used to do is I used to go to Yerushalayim sometimes, not every Friday, but whenever I would go to Yerushalayim, I would go attend two shiurim on Friday mornings in Yerushalayim that I enjoyed attending. Ratzvi Koshalevsky in his yeshiva used to give a parsha shiur, and Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, Zichron Levracha. But then Chaim L'Chaim, Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel, Zichron Levracha, used to give a Parsha Shir, also Parsha Shmuz, like a Musar Shmuz. And with Rav Nassim Tzvi, it was just like, just seeing him, and the Mesiras Nefesh in his everyday life. And you knew you were experiencing something special when you were in the room. I happen to have felt that way about Tzvi Koshalevsky also. I felt like he was the most magnificent Magid Shir I've ever seen, and just the way he controlled a room of 80 bachrim, you know, or even more, and like was on top of what each guy was doing and challenged them. Also, a really, really remarkable experience. But Rav Nassim Tzvi, there was just something special about it. So when they came out with the Sichos of Rav Nassim Tzvi in print last year, when I was in Eretz Yisrael, one of the Talmidim told me that they had come out with this. I immediately went to the store to buy it. So in Rav Nassim Tzvi Sichos, he explained that all four of these answers that Tosefta really one answer, and it's based on Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Says all of his Sichos Musar were based on Rav Chaim Shmulevitz's Sichos Musar. Says all four are really one answer. The Medrash is highlighting a single midah that's necessary for leadership. That's necessary to be a king. Not necessarily for tzidkus or for whatever, that's necessary for leadership. And that is to have a sense of achrayus. Yehuda was a bal achrayus. He's someone who took responsibility. It came in four different forms. How did it come in four different forms? First of all, v'pnei shahoda b'tamar. What does it mean, v'pnei shahoda b'tamar? Somebody can always hide behind somebody else and pretend that he's not guilty. Something went wrong. Something didn't happen when it should have happened. Very easy in those situations to point fingers and to not step up and say, it went wrong because of me. It didn't happen because I didn't do what I was supposed to do. Tamar gave Yehuda the opportunity to do that. She gave him the opportunity to hide. She didn't make him respond. She was willing to be, as Chazal learned in Sota Daf Yud, that we learn from Tamar, that it's better to be thrown into Kivshan Eish rather than to be Mal B'nei Chaver Abraham. She was willing to die rather than have Yehuda take that responsibility. But he took the responsibility. So he's not being rewarded for a sin. And it's not a reward for a sin. And yes, it's better not to have sinned. But as far as a leadership quality is that when, you know, everyone sins. Everyone except for the few people that the Gemara identifies at the end of the first paragraph, Basra, Yishai and Binyamin, Kilav, whatever, everyone sins pretty much. Everyone in history, anyone who ever really mattered, like people who make an impact, of course you're going to falter sometimes. But leadership quality number one is the sense of achrayus in taking responsibility for the sin. Second, Yehuda saved Yosef with the argument, Ma Betza. The argument was not simply that we have nothing to gain. Of course the Shvatim weren't interested in personal gain. That wasn't what it was about. The argument was the next phrase. What was the next phrase? V'chisinu esdamo. And we'll cover up his blood. What's that about? So Rashi explains. It means, V'na'olim es misaso. Will hide the fact that we killed him. Is that really where we're going to make our mark? By having it in Torah and then hiding it? If we're really so confident that our psak is the correct psak, we need to take responsibility for our psak. We need to say that we're not ashamed of our psak. Meaning, if it's really correct, if you believe, you know, sometimes we justify certain behaviors in our head, but we're still embarrassed about it. Like, we would never admit it publicly. But in our head, we've explained to ourselves why it's really good and it's really a great mitzvah. You know, like, I have to sleep through the first half of Seder because it's going to give me the koach to focus better in shir. Oh God, I hope Rebbe didn't notice that I slept through the first. You know, like, it's an entirely, we justified it. We're convinced we did the right thing. We did the right thing. If we're really so convinced that we did the right thing, then why are we embarrassed about it? Meaning, one geder of knowing whether you did the right thing or not is how embarrassed are you by it. If so, that's Yehuda's Mr. Shmuz. Yeah, you made it in Torah. You really sure it was L'shem Shemayim? Why are we doing this V'chisinu as Dama then? Why are we trying to cover it? We have to take our cries for it. Then third, Yehuda offers to take Binyamin's place as an Eved in Paro's palace. Now it's true, he promised Yaakov that he would take responsibility for Binyamin, but usually when it comes down to it, people can come up with some excuse as to, yeah, but within reason. I take responsibility, but like, if I stay here, that means the whole rest of my life is gone. All my plans for the future, anything I ever wanted to do, being able to see my family ever again, that's all gone. There's a chrayus and there's a chrayus, you know, I'm not willing to take that. But Yehuda teaches that a Baal HaChrayus doesn't make excuses. And if you made a promise, you keep that promise. And even if it means giving up the entire rest of his life. Again, not necessarily a chiyuv, not necessarily the greatest tzaddik, the greatest Baal HaChrayus, the greatest leader. Because the leader takes responsibility. And then finally, Yehuda is granted Malchus, according to the Medrash, because he jumped into the Yardin first. Ah, what's the big chiddush? So many people were big enough tzaddikim to be Moser Nefesh throughout Jewish history. The chiddush wasn't that he was willing to be Moser Nefesh. Lesser Jews throughout the ages were willing to be Moser Nefesh. The chiddush is that he wasn't even asked to be Moser Nefesh. There's no reason why it had to be him to be Moser Nefesh. Somebody had to be. Someone had to jump in. But there's no reason why it had to be him. Nobody was identified as the person who it's on his head. You know, in that context, the language of the Tosefta is very striking. Tosefta says, Shek sha'alu shvatim va'amdu alayam, ze omer ani yored, v'ze omer ani yored. This one was saying, oh, I'll do it. This one was saying, I'll do it. Kafat shifto shal Yehuda v'yarad b'tchila. Then Yehuda didn't say anything. Yehuda just did it. Everyone else is talking about what they're going to do. A lot of talk about, oh, I'll do it. And then Yehuda doesn't talk at all. He does it. He just steps up and he does it. Yehuda teaches us that to be a leader, it's not enough to know what we believe in theory or to talk about what we think ought to be done, but to actually take action. A lot of times you find when you, especially when you deal in communal work, if you're involved in mostos, whether it be a shul, a yeshiva, you know, and there are people that need to take leadership roles. So you find, you get the sense of who the Baalei Achrayus are. There's always people who are willing to offer an opinion. There are always people that are willing to say what should be done. You know, any bachur in yeshiva, in any yeshiva, not here, not just here, any bachur in any yeshiva can tell you five ways to make the yeshiva better. Right? Oh, it would be so much better if. Yeah, so no, what have you done to change it? You're not happy with the, you know, with the food, with the culture, with the, what have you done to make the place a better place on any level, on any level? Even if you can't fix the exact problems that you're always happy to opine about the issues, but are we willing to take responsibility in any mosad? I'm not saying you, I'm not saying this yeshiva, in any mosad, I'm telling you. You know, there was a famous case in the 1970s, I think it was Kitty Genovese. You familiar with this? She was murdered, brutally murdered, slowly, over the course of like 2 hours, in plain sight of dozens of people. It was like in this park area that was surrounded by high-rise apartments, and everyone was looking out the window as a group of people were slowly beating this woman to death. And no one called the police. And everyone thought, after that murder, what has society come to? This is the absolute worst. That people don't care about murder? They don't care that someone is brutally being beaten right in front of their eyes? And then they realized, it's not that people don't care about murder. It's that everyone realized there are dozens of people watching. And therefore, somebody's going to call the police. Why should it be me? Somebody's going to take care of it. And that was everyone's attitude. There wasn't a single leader in the group. You know, that's what they say if there's ever a situation of trauma that needs immediate assistance, and there's a large group around, if you're there, there's a good idea for life, immediately start instructing people. You, go call 911. You, get me a pillow. You, do that, right? You have to immediately start it, because otherwise everyone's just looking around. Oh, I wonder when someone's going to do something. But while everyone else is wondering where leadership is going to come from, Shevet of Yehuda is kofet. Shevet of Yehuda jumps and they take a position, they do something about it. And that's ultimately, you'll find, like in any group, you'll see this through your lives, that there will be a couple of people that are real leaders, and that's what defines a real leader. People take responsibility for their mistakes, yes, like we discussed. But I think most importantly, people who are just willing to do, and not only willing to talk, but willing to actually do, to take responsibility for themselves. That's what it means to be a Balach Rayas and ultimately to be a Melech.